Hey, you're listening to Career Talks with Larry Career Eye.
There. The name is Larry Quiriray, and welcome to yet another episode of Career Talks to. Career Talks to, the podcast that focuses on conversations I have with people I find interesting. And my guest today is no less Leslie Godet, a U.S. self-care specialist for female entrepreneurs, helping them organize and prioritize self-care to support their lifestyle so they can wake up with more energy and focus and intention to tackle their daily activities and serve their clients with confidence. And while she focuses on females entrepreneurs, males will benefit from this as well. So just because I say it's a female entrepreneur focused podcast, and I'd like as many female entrepreneurs to be involved in this conversation, I think males can benefit from some of the nuggets she's going to come with. So here's the conversation. Remember, subscribe from whatever platform you listen to for every engaging conversation that I have with some of the most interesting people I meet out there. Hi, Leslie. Thank you so much for joining me. It's quite sunny here in Zimbabwe, where the weather is a bit, I don't know, it's a bit cool and sunny at the same time. What is it like on your end?
Right now, the sun is shining brightly. It's starting to warm up a lot because we are approaching our rainy season, the hurricane season, they call it here in Florida. So we are approaching it. Next month begins a six-month track for hurricanes, or tropical storms as well. I'm actually not looking forward to that, but yeah, the weather right today is beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, like if you look at it from Zimbabwe, we've been talking about how little rain we've had. So it's good for you.
Oh, wow!
Getting rain, because it's not as crap. I don't know. I think they declared a state of national disaster because of the so little rain that we had, which means that there's a lot of people be vulnerable when it comes to food. So probably might need some of that rain on our end.
Oh my gosh. Well, I know what it's like because I did at one point, we lived in California, and California also has problems. They don't have, they don't get the rainfall that they need. So they have a lot of fires, and they don't have, you look at the foliage and it's not always green. It's usually brown. And they're not getting the rain that they need. Although people tend to love the sunny days, I still think rain is so important, and we should hope for those days as well. So, you miss it. You take it for granted when it doesn't happen. So, yeah, I can totally relate to what you're saying, what you're going through right now.
Yeah, I don't think we get as far as the fires, to be honest. But when I think of California, I just think of Tupac, California love. So just the management of California. Hip-hop is a thing. It's a thing. Is hip-hop a thing in your world? In your personal world?
In my personal world, I'm more, I do like some hip-hop. I'm really kind of all-rounded, I guess. I like all types of music. It just really depends on the mood that I'm in. But I'm kind of a little bit old school. I listen to a lot of the older music, more like the classical rock. I like to listen to the Eagles, to Fleetwood Mac, things like that, where it's just kind of easy music, if you will. That kind of dates me a little bit, but yeah, I find that music is a little bit more to my speed.
Yeah, I know the feeling because I came across something. I've turned it into a sticker on my WhatsApp. It's that the moment you realize you're now as old as old people. Like you're the same
Isn't
age
that
as
so
old
funny?
People.
I know. It feels so weird because I still feel really young, but I notice that some of my ideas around music and things that I would do were when I was younger, for example, doing things in life, I wouldn't think twice about trying something new. Like I went scuba diving with my friend when we were in our early 20s, we were in the Dominican Republic and just decided to learn how to scuba dive in the pool at the resort we were at. And they took us out scuba diving. We went down, let me just see, how many meters was that? About almost 60. So about, I would say 20 meters, just a little over 20 meters. And we weren't supposed to go down that far, but that was okay. It was fun. I enjoyed that. But ask me to do that today, and I might say, well, there's all of these external factors, things that could go wrong. Now I think of that because, you get to that time of your life and you start thinking about, well, if I do this, there's the consequence could happen of this. Whereas before, as when you're younger, you're like, okay, if I do this, I'm going to have this experience. Mm. You're not thinking about consequences. So, yeah, it's something I've learned as I've gotten older. I mean, that's okay. There's still a lot of things that I want to do. I still want to get up in a hot air balloon. I'm still keen on maybe doing skydiving. So we'll see.
I know the feeling because, I mean, I have an experience when I went to South Africa at some point. Didn't tell anyone I was going there. Didn't tell anyone. I think only the booking agent knew where the hotel I was staying in. Went into this place called Hillbro in the middle of night with a cab driver. So when I told people where I went to, they were like, how, fam? Do you know how crazy that place? Because there's this place called Diplomat's Hotel. Now, Hillbro is one of the most violent places. Sections of Hillbro, I beg your pardon, is one of the most violent places in Johannesburg. So if you ask, if you say to me, would I go there today? No. that's when you have excuses like, no, I'm an adult now. And then there's a thing I'm going through when I say, I have decided to become the deliberate adult in the room. Because I think a part of my generation is still very, infatuated with the idea of being forever young.
Yeah, I think that any generation really is infatuated with being young. And that's why you hear a lot of people having those midlife crises. Yeah. But I think it's, for me, for the last, especially when I got married, my husband and I, we both decided to move around. Where I was born in the U.S., my husband was born in Canada. I have dual citizenship, so we were able to come down to the U.S. What does that explain?
It explains why you know meters.
Yes, I know. It's unfortunate though because it really makes it hard when you're here in the U.S. I've gotten so used to saying pounds and saying like Fahrenheit instead of and feet and things like that. Yeah. But I've just become so accustomed to it. So I actually have to really think about it, trying to really to like do the math to change it back to Celsius or to meters, to yards, things like that, where, they have the different terminologies. And I don't know why they don't do that here. I don't know why they've push back on it, but as I was saying, we moved around a lot. Canada, all across Canada, the U.S. We spent a couple of winters down in Mexico, and I just feel now, as I'm slowing down in my older years, and I'm not old by any means, but as I'm slowing down, I'm actually starting to like just a slower pace. I want to enjoy every moment and not just be going 100 miles an hour like I did when I was younger, trying to grab onto everything. So that's kind of how I look at experiencing life. And now I'm much more really geared to collecting experiences in life rather than things. So for me, I'm not about going shopping and filling my closet with shoes and clothes and material things. I really love collecting experiences, meeting new people as part of that, making new friends. As I said, we spent 2 winters in Mexico. It was beautiful. The area was just south of Cancun in a small fishing village of 10,000 people, and it was beautiful. And we're planning on doing that again. We're planning on looking at another area in Mexico to go do that again, because we just feel like this is you live life for every moment of every day of your life, not when you retire, but just doing it every day. Like, it's part of our nature. We decided that right out of the gate when we met. So I've loved that. I've loved my life. I've loved the journey, and I'm excited for whatever comes next. And knowing that also, because I have God in my corner, and I look to Him for guidance, and He can show me whether this is a good idea or not, that, you know, that makes it so much more joyful, because I know I'm not going to be doing it alone.
I guess that speaks to enhancing the quality of life. And I think a lot of people only thought about that when COVID happened. I like to call it a big pause, because when I get some people get triggered by COVID because everybody stayed at home. But that made a lot of people think about what is the value of the life that I'm living. And I think that's something that you also, in your work, which you're going to talk about just a bit, or we can even segue into it quite nicely, about the enhancement of the quality of life, where for a lot of, when you are, it's a product of being young, I guess. I mean, it's like boomers got mad at millennials, and then now you've got millennials, the guys who just before millennials, Generation X was it, is mad at Gen Z and saying, oh, these people, everybody sort of thinks when you're younger, you're unbreakable, and so you don't really look at the quality of the experience, but sometimes the quantity of the experience. So, of course, there's a lot to be learned from what doing that as you're younger. But talk to me a bit about that in enhancing the quality of life, and also in your work, how you get round to that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up about the different generations, because one of the things that I was noticing in some of the research that I've been doing was that a lot of people between, you know, the younger generation, 30s and younger, and that 20 to 30s, I guess you could say, age gap, is that they are experiencing burnout on a different level. Like, I'm bringing burnout up right now just because they're going and after what their goals are. A lot of them are either right out of the gate. First of all, they're going to college or university, getting their degrees, going either into business, and they're working so hard. The mindset over here is like, the more the better. You have to go after more. And also, I found the research is that a lot of them weren't happy with their quality of life. Even today, I notice some of the younger paralegals for the law. I'm still in law a little bit. I have a consultation, I guess, if you will, business, where I support a team of lawyers in California. It's part of my business. And I've noticed that a lot of the younger paralegals there are leaving the firms because they are not feeling that quality of life. Why? Because they're working 15, 16-hour days, and they're still sort of, kind of, on call on the weekends for emails if people email them over the weekend. And to me, that is just taking away that whole mindset around having quality of life outside of the office. You're basically saying that I'm yours 24/7. And so what I found is a lot of them started looking for, especially post-COVID, they started looking for other ways to live a more, I guess, quality-based life. So some of them who were there from the very beginning of the firm, where the firm started doing the type of business that they're doing, the head paralegal decided after having her baby that, oh, this really actually is interrupting quality of life at home with my family, because I don't wish to continue this lifestyle. And so she went out and found something where it was more conducive to the lifestyle she wanted to live, which was being more at home and present with her young baby, who is about a year and a half now. Same for one of the other paralegals who has two grown children who are still in grade school, but she's also wanting to, you know, she wanted that high, she decided on a hybrid life work style, which means you're part in the office and you work remote part of the time, but still finding that she has to fight for that. to still be able to ask for those days where it's a remote only and not going into the office, because she has a long way to drive and she still has young kids in school that she has to drop off and pick up. So when I started looking at these young women that I was talking to, and not even just them, but the young men in the office who are also paralegals, and looking at their what they're dealing with, I started realizing that it's affecting the younger generation in a way that they've gone after these incredible careers, but they are at that they're sacrificing quality of life. And for me, what I want to do is to promote or to encourage employers, whether someone is a business owner and they have team members, whether they're employees, part-time, full-time, or contract workers, or they are an employee, part-time, full-time, or a contract worker, that mindset of quality of life means that they're not just pursuing it outside of the office where they take care of themselves and they feel good, they are making sure that they are having fun with their friends and family, they're doing things for themselves, maybe self-care wise, where they're making sure that their mindset is right, for example, that they're thinking positively about life and looking for solutions rather than looking at problems all the time, to bringing that also into the office, you know, making sure that they take those breaks, that they're eating well, that they're sleeping well, that they're not hydrating well. And I want the organizations to also recognize that they need to actually promote that, because to me, anything that gets done well in a company has to start at the top. So the leaders have to embrace that. And what I found was the law firm that I still support, when I talked to the managing partner about this, you know, he was more on board of how can I support the team rather than him having to be a part of it. And I think he missed the mark. And so for me, that's one of the reasons why right now I'm really focusing on women, business owners, whether they have a team or they don't, whether they don't have a team and they're ready to start scaling and adding a couple of team members, depending on how big they want to go, helping them to not only make sure that they're looked after quality of life, so that they're putting in things in place like essentials of learning to structure their day, so you know, around their calendar, so they're not overwhelming themselves, to taking those breaks daily, to learning to say yes to the right things, to having a hard stop at the end of their day, making sure that they have quality of life with their family and their friends without the guilt, and also if they, so that when they know they're ready, they're fully taking care of themselves, then they can actually start adding team members and having this model that they follow, that they can teach their team members around, this is what I want wellness in my company. I want you to take care of you in the company, and I want you to take care of you outside of the company, like you to take care of yourself, and I support that. I support you. And so that's really what I want to do, is to be able to have, you know, as I said, start here, because I know the bigger organizations, a lot of them, they are old school. And it's just to teach them, you know, to teach somewhere, so that then it starts to make that ripple effect. People start really requesting or demanding that this is the type of lifestyle they want. You know, as a side note, I did a signature talk, if you will, or a masterclass for a medical facility in London. It was online. It was for healthcare professionals. And one of the things that I found for them was they wanted to have self-development tools at their fingertips. They wanted to be able to go to workshops and masterclasses to learn how to take care of themselves, to bring more quality of life into their life, not only personally, but professionally. But what they found was their employers wanted them to do it on their own time. And if you're a healthcare professional that's listening in, like where you are now, if you work in that industry, you know you're tired at the end of your day. And the last thing you want to do is at the 7 o'clock at night, especially if you have a family, you have children, you don't want to have to be able to take time for yourself then to go and listen to someone for 75 minutes or an hour, 2 hours going through a class. You want to be able to do that during the day when you're fresh. And so really, it really does start with these organizations realizing that they need to actually incorporate things around self-care into their businesses to help to have that quality of life for their team members, because that will foster loyalty, that will foster community, collaboration, people will support each other, the business will feel supported, you'll see it in the productivity, which will help with the bottom line. But it really does start at the top. And so, you know, as I said, I talked to this organization for their team members, and I provided them actually with a video that I created around tackling absenteeism and presenteeism, because that's a real thing. And it's costing the health industry billions of dollars annually because of people are stressed. They are tired. They are starting to feel disconnected from, you know, work. They're not liking their job. And I think it really just comes down to they don't have that quality of life in the office because it's not promoted. So I hope that answered your question.
Well, there are a couple of things that I picked up from there. Like you gave the example of the lady who stays a bit far away and has to come to work, and it affairs a lot of things. I'm just thinking out loud and figuring it out as I'm saying it, that because a lot of people have had to travel to different cities to pursue their dream, therefore, you know, the presence of extended family around that keep a check on you, because your extended family can quickly tell if you're going through something, and friends that you grew up with can tell whether you're going through something. That disconnect from self at times, that has become made it more urgent for bosses who, you know, give opportunities from people who come from far away, who do not necessarily have immediate support systems to take care of this particular issues. And also in some instances, the executive herself could be somebody who got transferred from somewhere. And one of the things that some people then start having, and I think I'll go back to many people realizing this, that it was popular in the teens and the 2000s and to the noughties, as they call them, to outsource parts or huge, or even, you know, if not assistance, but completely let the external people to take over the parenting duties. And then you wake up one day and you don't know your children, because suddenly you have to live with them during COVID, during lockdowns. We had hard lockdowns in this part of the world, and that had a lot of created a lot of stress factors in many families. That sort of makes what you're talking about sort of pertinent, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And also think about it from this perspective. Like you mentioned you were on lockdown. I know in Canada locked down their borders. So if they, you know, they put out a call to anyone who was from Canada, who was Canadian, that they were to come home now because they were locking it up. And that, you know, I understood that it was important. One of the things, though, I wanted to point out was that this really affected the young people, because imagine your children, if they're in grade school especially, and they're used to going to school to be around their friends. That's part of it. It's learning to socialize. And they've been, that part of their life has been stripped away from them. And so now they're learning from home. They're having to learn a whole new format of learning. So they're learning through whether someone is tutoring them at home, or they have to go online for online classes with their teacher. It still took away that factor of being in community. It's not the same as being in the same room with your friends, especially when you're that age. So kids started to feel the effects of it. Parents, of course, if you started working at home, had to learn how to juggle work. I mean, the whole family did, how to juggle the work day and then family time, because you were in one place where both environments were coexisting together. And a lot of women that I know, they had to learn how to turn that off, like to turn off their work their work cap. One woman that I talked to, she equated working from home, that she always had to be working. She'd be in her office. And so she found ways to get herself out of the office, her office in her home, to doing things with her grandchildren, you know, with her family. She had to intentionally do that. And I think that's what happened to a lot of people, is that they got into that environment working from home. Then they started actually realizing, I actually like this format, working from home. But then, you know, that's when a lot of employers were started pushing back, saying, well, we really want to have people in the office, you know, post-COVID, and trying to figure out how to make it work. Because a lot of people then started looking at, like you were saying, my quality of life. I didn't notice it. It wasn't on my radar before. I was so used to just getting up, going to work, coming home, having this whole cycle going on and on and on, but not realizing that once it was that particular type of cycle was taken away and it was a new one and put in its place where you worked from home, and then you were told, we got to go back to the old way, a lot of people pushed back and they were saying no. So they started looking for ways to find remote jobs. And a lot of companies realized, if we don't get on board, we're going to start losing people. What I'm finding, though, too, I'll bring it back to the law firm that I support, is that they are wanting people to be in the office. Now, they are allowing for some remote work, but they want you to, physical bodies in the office. And again, a lot of people are saying that they're not, they don't want that. But they also know that even being outside of the office, that they're on call. They feel like they're on all the time. So, yeah, to bring it, I mean, I know that people, you know, working from home with families, it was really a hard transition to try to separate the two. But I think they started to really like the idea because it gave them more, I guess, it gave them more awareness of where they were lacking, you know, because they were so used to working, maybe coming home late. The family got used to that, and then the family got used to them always being around. And so they had to learn how to navigate that whole new reality. And so for me, I think businesses really can still thrive, but they have to have the right mindset. You know, you don't have to have bodies in your office all the time. And if you find that that's something that you want, you might find yourself losing a lot of people. Secondly, maybe that is an opportunity for you to downsize your office space, you know, so you're saving yourself some money, but you're still being able to thrive in other ways. So, yeah, I know I went off a little bit, but I think, yeah, overall, quality of life at home, putting it the two worlds together, professional and personal, can be done. It's just, you know, for me, what I've learned in working with people is separating that is through looking at how you structure your day, how your business, like what are you doing for your business, making sure that you're making that time. Because we don't get into business anyways. As an example there, you work from home, I work from home. We both didn't get into business for ourselves so that we'd be working all the time, right? We got into business so that we would have quality of life. Like we would actually, you know, be able to do things for ourselves that brought us joy outside of business.
You know, when I talk about that, I say, people ask me, I've been working from home, I think, since 2008, if not before. The thing was, the question for me was, if I decided I wanted to go and watch a cricket match or travel because there was some sort of thing that was happening in another country, if I was working, you know, on a regular basis and having to go somewhere and be seen somewhere, what that would mean is that I couldn't enjoy the things I wanted to enjoy. So I could plan my life around those particular things. So now, but what I will then ask is, one of the things that many bosses will not see about themselves is burnout. Mm-hmm. In principle, what is burnout, and how does one recognize, see in themselves that they're going through burnout? Because it's easy for me to see it in somebody else that they're struggling, but how do I know that I'm struggling?
Yeah, and that's a great question because especially I can say just from example for myself, when I was working full time, I was so used to being in the grind of working so hard and working long hours that I didn't re recognize that I was, leading a burnout lifestyle because one number one was expected of me to work and produce. And I think that's where the big issue is the what are you looking for? Are you looking for more product? Are you looking for your people to be productive, but in a way that their wellness is taken care of, or if their wellness is, depleted, they're not looking after themselves. So burnout really is a state of like complete mental, physical, and emotional exhaustion. You might find it difficult to engage in activities that once brought you joy. For example, you no longer care about things that are important to you. You might feel an increased sense of hopelessness. This is especially if you get to that place where you feel like where your life revolves around your job, like I did. And one of the reasons why I decided to work for myself was when I did take back my time, which is what I did. I believe it saved my life. And so for me, I did feel at that point a sense of hopelessness, like, is this all there is to life? Is this what I've signed up for? And I was starting to feel depressed around that. You might feel disconnected from what you're doing. You might isolate yourself from others. One of the things about burnout is it might make you feel shame. You think that there's something wrong with you, and you isolate yourself from other people because you don't want to be judged, because you fear that they're going to say what you're saying in your head, which is you think you're a failure, you think that you're not good enough or worthy or deserving of better, of a better life, of a better lifestyle. And so you're going to think other people are going to judge you for feeling the way you do. And so you isolate yourself from your friends. And I can say from experience that I've done that. Tired, because you're not getting enough quality sleep. You might go to bed at the same time, but the next day you wake up exhausted because you're not getting that quality of sleep. You're irritable to the people around you, your friends, your family, your work colleagues. Again, those sleepless nights, you might find yourself waking in the middle of the night, panicking because of things that were left undone during the day or something that you did, that you made a mistake. I mean, that's what can happen. And then your work quality becomes affected by it because you're not really showing up. That could be that whole presenteeism kind of where you're showing up, just doing the basics, but you're not really there. You're distracted. And then your relationships can be affected, your personal and your professional relationships. And I really talk a lot about with, when I do teachings around burnout, I talk a lot about four stages, which are the honeymoon phase, onset of stress stage, the chronic stress and burnout stage, and then crisis and burnout syndrome stage. And those are like four different areas. And the honeymoon phase is really so, it's really, I guess what some people call it a no-brainer. But because you're not thinking about this as actually being a burnout stage, you don't recognize what you're doing until you actually get into the second stage of it or the second phase of it. So the honeymoon phase, just as an example, is where you might be working on something. You're excited. You might be having a new job. You're excited. You're energized. You're passionate about what you're doing. You might feel that surge of motivation. You're creative, and you have this drive, like, to achieve your goals. So you get into work and you start working on something. You set maybe might be an unrealistic timeline, but you don't realize it at the time. You think, oh, you can do it because you're so confident that you can do it because you feel really good about it. But then you become so engrossed in your work that you lose sight of your well-being, and you ignore signs of stress, fatigue, or maybe even overextend yourself, which can lead to overwhelm. And that can then gradually lead you into the next stage of like onset of stress, where you start feeling tired, more tired, dissatisfied, decrease in your productivity, maybe even more challenging to focus on what you're working on, physically fatigued, making it difficult to even do your job well, or if you run a business, to run your business. And then, of course, that then if you keep going, which I've talked to multiple women who've had several cases of burnout, I believe everyone, maybe they don't recognize it, but they probably have their own burnout story. But, you know, if you get into that next, that third stage of chronic stress and burnout, this is where you're going to feel that decline in your physical and emotional well-being, like significantly, where you're going to really start leading to that emotional exhaustion along with your physical, overwhelmed. You're going to feel that detachment. Again, this isolation where I talked about withdrawing from social situations, maybe from your friends, not letting anyone see you, hiding so that no one knows what's going on. And you're struggling a lot with negativity, your own self-talk, because you're beating yourself up consistently. And then that leads into the last stage, which I speak about, which is crisis and burnout syndrome. And if you reach that point, you will have reached your limit and you're not going to be able to function as you normally would. This stage, which I've spoken with several women, they've actually gotten to this stage of burnout. I've made it through to stage three, stage two and stage three multiple, stage two multiple times, stage three a couple of times in my life. But in stage four, this is where it will have escalated to an overwhelming level where it significantly will impact your physical, mental, and emotional well-being. You will have intense physical symptoms, maybe even like chronic headaches, gastrointestinal issues, fatigue on a level where you really are not getting rest. And then it has that mental toll where it becomes more severe, feelings of hopelessness, what I was talking about earlier, where you feel like there's just no hope. You feel empty and disconnected from everything. You don't feel like doing anything, procrastinating, and it gets into every area of your life, affecting your relationships, your personal fulfillment, your professional performance. And again, if you're a business owner, as an example, if you're listening to this and you're a business owner, if you've experienced this or you're heading toward this stage, really pay attention, because, you know, one of the women that I spoke to, well, I spoke to two that got severely to this stage. One who had her own business, was lucky enough to have other people, team members, who were able to step in and help her. But it took her 2 years to recover. And one other woman had to actually give up her business because she just couldn't do it anymore. So there's a loss of revenue there. And that's why it's so important to really actually remind yourself that if you're at the beginning stages of something where it's new, brand new, you're excited, energized, motivated, passionate, creative, you've got this drive, to remember to put in those essentials, like taking care of yourself, having those breaks every single, you know, at least every hour to 90 minutes, having a hard stop at your day. Do not work into the wee hours of the morning trying to roll into bed to try to actually get a good night's rest, because your brain won't shut off right away. And you know, things like learning to say yes to the right things, filling your calendar so you're not overwhelming yourself. You know, I truly believe that there's structure, there's freedom in structure. When you know what you're doing, you have clarity and focus, and you know exactly what you're doing, and you're intentional around it. So I always say, right from the very beginning, paying attention to, like, you're in the honeymoon phase of something, and making sure that you don't go down that road to burnout.
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of the things that you are talking about, I think anyone can relate to. I've had burnout. I think I got to stage four at some point where I just couldn't get out of bed. But you focus specifically on women and female executives. What makes them a special target for you? Is it a strategy, or is it a need that you saw specifically that you thought you could satisfy?
Yeah, so what I found with, especially with a woman who owns her own business, and if she has a team, is there was a couple of things. One, feeling like, okay, I have to always be on top of everyone to make sure that they're doing what I need. And that really comes down to knowing your people, knowing that they are reliable. And that's where I was saying, bringing that quality of life aspect into your business, people are going to want to come in. It's going to foster that loyalty to you, making sure that your team is on the same, has the same or understanding of your vision and your mission for your company so that they actually can, you know, they're behind it. You know, if you don't believe in something, how can you put your full effort into it? And so I really wanted to be able to help women like that to make sure that they understand their vision and their mission, but also then they can start looking for the right people to come in. One of the things I found as I was doing some market research and I spoke with several women was that several women executives was that they had realized that sometimes they don't handle their stress well, and it shows in the way that they interact with their people. But also the communication piece of not, you know, some people would, you know, they found some of their employees or team members would kind of disappear, they'd have to be on them, on top of them consistently to find out where they're at in the project. And some of them were like, they needed to be under the gun. Some people would do things last minute. And I think a lot of the time procrastination just comes from maybe they don't have clarity on what the vision is for whatever project you have them doing. And maybe there's something going on in their life. And I really feel it's important. I'm not saying that you have to know every single detail of someone who works for you in their life, but it's really good to know that if you have somebody who works in, for example, if you live in the United States, like I have a team member, you know, who is in Zimbabwe. I have a team member I have another team member who's another part of the world as well. And it's just like knowing this person has children, or this person doesn't, or this person has children. Their hours are like for whatever time zone they're in. Being mindful of that is really important. Understanding like what their lifestyle is so that you can make sure that you're not overwhelming them, making sure that they understand what you are asking of them. One of the greatest lessons I ever learned was from someone who was extremely difficult to work for. One of the lawyers that I worked for a few years ago, 11 years ago, I was just filling in for his assistant who was out on maternity leave. And it was a brand new area of law that I'd never worked in. And he was teaching me. And I remember going into his office because he'd asked me to come in. He wanted me to do something. And I immediately started to write. And he said, I want you to stop writing. And he said, what I want you to do first is to listen to what I'm asking of you. I want you to repeat it back to me so I know that you understand it. And if you have any questions, and then you can write it down. It was such a valuable lesson to me, Larry, because I felt that that was the pivotal moment for me to understand how to learn better for me was to actually really first listen and then to repeat it back and then to write it down, and I retained it so much better. And so what I found like with the women that I spoke with was that a lot of their issues were coming from either team members who were disappearing on them, I was saying that I feel like just a lot of it came down to lack of clarity, or they didn't handle their stressors well. And also their quality of life. As I said, one of the women, I mentioned this earlier in our talk, was that one of the women that I spoke with equated work with her home because she worked from home. She had an office in her home, which most of them did anyways. Not I think maybe one or two that I spoke with had a brick and mortar office or a place that they would go and do work, a shared office space. But she equated work with home. And so when she was home, she felt, you know, she was always there working, but she wasn't taking care of herself, you know, making sure that she was eating right, hydrating herself, taking those breaks, having the stop, making time for herself. I really think that's so important because when a leader leads from a place of well-being, her team is going to, she's going to reflect that to her team, and her team can model that because they're going to feel confident. This is what you want for you, so I feel confident I can do that for me, and that just has a better environment. But that's really why I want to work with women, because as I said, I want to get into the organizations later, like bigger organizations, but I think that's going to be a bigger project, and it's going to take more than just myself and the team members that I have. I think that's going to really have to have like a few different people who can go into different areas with expertise in different areas to be able to sit with organizations, to maybe sit with their IT department, or to sit with their human resources department, or to sit with their staff, you know, to sit with their team leaders, the organization leaders. I think it's going to be a much bigger project for down the road. But for me, it's just having that wellness approach. So I really, like I said, that's why I started with women, small businesses, to really help them. And especially if you don't have a team and you're ready for that, to help you to not only make sure that wellness is part of your lifestyle, but then it helps you to become really aligned with who I want my team to be, helps you to source the right people. And people are looking for that, by the way. They're looking for quality of life. So if you offer that, people are going to flock towards that because they're going to want to work for someone who's going to value them, who's going to actually model that behavior, that's going to be a part of the lifestyle in the business, that promotes family, and that doesn't just say I promote family, but actually really it's like walking the talk that you talk. So I mean, I hope that answered your question, Larry. I know I went on a little bit, but I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, it definitely does, because then it's specific people that you want to talk to. You did say quite clearly that for bigger organizations, that's for a little bit later. I guess now what I ask is, like, where do people find out what you're up to, how your sessions work, and is there anything else that you'd like to share with people before we go?
Yeah, just a couple of things. So I wasn't able to really find any, I found a couple of statistics. There's really no dollar value as far as statistic wise with respect to Zimbabwe, but I know that there has been a significant economic impact due to decreased productivity and increased operational costs with respect to absenteeism, even healthcare costs as well. I can say specifically for the United States, I found that U.S. employers are, with respect to absenteeism, it's costing them, a loss, replacement labor and a loss of productivity estimated to equal about 3% of their annual payroll. So that can add up to a lot. There's about a million people that take that a day off from work in the United States just for just to be away because of absenteeism, and it's not necessarily because they're sick, but they just need what they call a mental health day. And then you have the presenteeism, right? I talked about that. It's, where people are showing up to work and just doing the what they can to get by during the day. But just a lot of the time they're distracted, and that's costing the U.S. about $150 billion a year. And that's a lot of money. So it's like so important to like start looking at health as an important aspect of your business. And so that's why, as I said, to me, it's really important. It's one of the things that I strive for, is to really make sure that wellness itself is, I'm determined to create a world where self-care, compassion, personal growth is prioritized, not only in the business, but the personal life in your home with your family, because I want to really have people to live at their best potential, to really unlock joy and purpose for more fulfilling lives. So for me, if you're a woman who has a business, you maybe are looking to add a team member, or you already have team members in place, please, you can reach out to me. Larry will have my contact information. I'll make sure that he has, I'll have given my email. I have my website, which is herextraordinarylifebydesign.co is my website. And you can go on there and see all about what I do. There are links there for you to actually schedule a free consultation with me to talk about your business and the wellness of your business. And then from there, we can talk about what it could look like to work with me, work alongside with you and your team, or to help you to incorporate a team into your business.
Well, I love the URL, because it's a call to action, extraordinarylife by design. So a lot of people don't design their lives at all. They just happenstance, or they see what's on Instagram and say, I want a bit of that. Then you wake up one day and you're like, no, actually, this is not for me. I'd rather live on a farm and eat fruits. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's okay too. You know, what you want for your life is okay. It doesn't have to look like anyone else, and it doesn't have to be what someone else tells you your life should be. It should really bring you joy and purpose and fulfillment, and you want to get up every day. You get up with that energy, and you're so excited for your life. And it has to be what aligns with you, what really, as I say, as I like to say, one of the terms we use over here, floats your boat, because you really want it. You really love it. And again, it's individual. It's your life. It doesn't have to look like anyone else's.
Okay. Let's go to it. Thank you very much.
Hey, you're listening to Career Talks with Larry Career Eye.
It for this week's episode. Add us to your podcatcher or on iTunes now so that you can make sure you never miss out on another second of our wonderful podcast. We would hate for you to miss out. Have a great week, everyone.